The Anglican Church is a strange creature in its makeup. At its centre is a highly committed cadre of clergy, missionaries, monks and nuns, and lay people in various positions of ministry and governance. In the next ring out, there are those who attend worship reasonably regularly and who have some kind of personal prayer life. In the next circle of belonging are those who attend church episodically, are not too sure if they believe all that the church believes, and who take part in extra church activities when and as it suits them. On the outer periphery are those who hardly ever attend, but who like to think of themselves as Anglicans, and who prefer to remain on the books just in case the church might be helpful to them. On this periphery also are those who are church friendly, who are prepared to do it a good turn, even if they never darken its doors. When Anglican parish churches go into growth mode, what they usually do is to absorb and bring into the centre those on the outer fringe, the outer rings as it were, while at the same time generating a new periphery. Some people do come in right from outside those relationship circles, but they are the exception rather than the rule. And of course, the full reality is that this is a two-way traffic, with the disenchanted, the bored and the fed up retreating into the outer circles when they perceive the Anglican Church to be an unrewarding reality. Yet this two-way traffic is one of our church's hidden strengths, for there's a kind of tidal rhythm in many people's pattern of church belonging over a lifetime. In one season of their life, inspiring spiritual leaders and a supportive peer group bring them into the centre, firing on all cylinders. In another season, disillusioning church decisions and dull as ditchwater vicars mean that the tide is out and they too are gravitationally pulled back from the church's shoreline. But wait a few years and a favourable combination of pressing life circumstances and inviting attractive church overtures and the tide is back in and they are back on board. This is a contrast to the high commitment churches which often appear to be running rings around us. When they burn people off and burn them out, they usually do a thorough job of it and the dropouts never let organised religion near them again. So our church style of accepting people on an as-is-where-is basis and being patient with their apparently lackadaisical patterns of religious practice has a certain wisdom about it. We're like a fisherman who lets the lines run out and then slowly reels it in when the tide of opportunity has arrived. You could argue that we have learned a lot from the church's first leader, Peter, a fisherman by trade, who, having let the side down spectacularly, was then patiently and thoroughly rehabilitated by Jesus. He got a second chance, and that made him even keener to put in a good performance this time. What was more, he was now particularly suited to the task of fishing for souls, because his recent experience made him understand from within why seeking out the lost and the fallen is a priority for God's family. But there is a hidden proviso that goes with being the church for second chance. It pivots off those last two words in today's gospel reading, follow me. Those of us at the centre of the church's life, the Keener's Mustard Brigade, need to let those words resonate within us, to be the conscience call that brings sparkle and depth into our Christian walk. The free and easy church for tidal rhythm Christians will only work effectively if the committed cadre at the centre really are following Jesus with conviction, content, and often costly sacrifice. If we go slack on the oars, then the whole dynamic goes into reverse and we will end up giving the impression that the tide is running out for everyone. In that connection, I recall attending a wedding breakfast some years ago and inquiring of the young men at top table, recent graduates of one of our church boarding schools, how they'd found the chaplain's ministry. He was great, they replied. He never mentioned God or talked about religion to us. But the call to follow me is about more than being prepared to give an account of the hope that is within us and being regular in worship. It sometimes means being prepared to live in a somewhat countercultural lifestyle compared to a society that offers many attractive paths to alternative fulfilments than those allowed by the gospel. Michel Coist was a French Catholic Christian whose books got a lot of mileage in the 60s and 70s. In one of his meditations, he imagines a priest sitting in a church at night, dialoguing with God as the full burden of his aloneness settles on him, having witnessed a number of inviting examples of human and relational fulfilment during the day. In a telling phrase, he says, "What a priest gives to God in the ardour of ordination commitment, the man within tries to take back every day." We are like that priest, each one of us, as we pass through this world, which is filled with so many lights of false promise contrary to the gospel. To stay on the path of a lifestyle marked by fidelity, loyalty, self-control, can take considerable endurance and resilience. A sense of trust, too, that God's providential care is watching over us in our struggles to stay on track in the gospel way. God does all he can within the limits of human freedom to help us to keep right on to the end of the road. Of course, the call and the costs are different for each one of us. In the section just over the page from what we heard this morning, Peter can't resist asking Jesus about what's going to happen to the beloved disciple. What will be expected of him? "Mind your own business," is the way one commentator has summed up the reply of Jesus. The call to follow me goes out to every one of us, but there's a different path that God has in mind for us as we pick up the pace behind him. Heroic martyrdom for one, a long lifetime of quiet service for another, hobnobbing with the rich and the powerful on behalf of God for another, running a soup kitchen by another, being a great dad or mum for one, living a quietly useful single life for another. As Jesus utters those two powerful words and then turns and walks off the beach, he's not expecting us to bunch up on the path behind him. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.